Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the June 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing The Shortwave Listener by Fred Waterer, Maranatha. Assignment. The Caspian Sea is the largest inland body of water in the world, bordered by Kazakhstan, Russia, Iran, Turkmenistan, and Azerbaijan. It spans 371,000 square kilometers and bridges Europe and Central Asia. It's fed mainly by Russia's Volga and Ural rivers, and the sea is not only rich in oil and gas, but is also home to numerous rare and endemic species, including the Caspian seal and 90% of the world's remaining sturgeon. But the Caspian Sea is in crisis. Climate change and the damming of Russia's rivers are causing the coastline to recede at an alarming rate. Recent studies have shown that the levels could drop between 9 and 18 meters by 2100. Antonia Bolingbroke Kent travels to Kazakhstan for assignment to report from the shores of the Caspian Sea on what can be done to prevent an environmental disaster. BBC World Service, Tuesday, May 21st, 0930 UTC. The documentary. If you've ever yelled at someone on social media about, say, cancel culture or mask wearing, then you are a soldier in the culture wars, those everyday battles for dominance between conflicting values. These wars can obsess us. They can consume our lives and tear families apart. Across this series of Things Fell Apart, John Ronson uncovers some strange and unexpected tales of real consequence. In this episode, how a disenfranchised young man, maddened by the strict lockdown laws in Michigan, joined a club of like-minded men and suddenly found himself under arrest for the most unlikely and horrific crime. BBC World Service, Wednesday, May 22nd, 1330. The documentary. The world of esports is a wide and varied domain which has captured audiences across the globe. In this documentary, O.J. Borg explores how one country, Denmark, is embracing the world of competitive gaming. BBC World Service, Thursday, May 23rd, 0930. And now Radio 101 by Ken Reitz, KS4ZR, KS4ZR1@gmail.com. Communications during the 2024 hurricane season. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's NOAA Office for Coastal Management, coastal counties of the U.S. are home to 129 million people, almost 40% of the U.S. population. Yet these coastal counties amount to less than 10% of the nation's land mass. These areas are not just tourist attractions or places for second homes. These coastal counties produce $10 trillion in goods and services, employ almost 55 million people, and pay $4 trillion in wages, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. The economic importance of America's coastal counties can't be overstated. If the coastal counties were to be seen as an individual country, it would rank third in the world in terms of gross domestic product, surpassed only by the U.S. as a whole and China. Throughout the U.S., weather-related disasters have taken their toll. In just the past 4 years, 2020 to 23, NOAA says there were 60 weather and climate disasters with losses exceeding $1 billion. In 2022 alone, the U.S. experienced $18 billion disasters. According to NOAA, the year 2023 broke multiple weather and climate records. Earth had its warmest July on record. July also set a record for the highest monthly sea surface temperature anomaly. 1.78 degrees F or 0.99 degrees C of any month in NOAA's 174-year record. In August, Tropical Storm Hillary made history as the first tropical storm to hit Southern California in 84 years. Rainfalls for Hillary broke virtually all daily rainfall records for the area. Nowhere to hide. According to NOAA, here's where the damage occurred. Northeast, East Coast, August 2023. More than 1,000 reports of high wind, severe hail, or tornadoes across many northeastern and eastern states. August 7th was a prolific day of severe weather, with damage reports from New York down to Georgia. Total costs, $1.6 billion. Northeast, July 2023. Severe storms brought devastation and flooding to portions of the Northeast, as areas reported up to 8 inches of rain within a 24-hour period. Montpelier, Vermont, received a record-breaking 5.28 inches of rain. Early estimates put the flood damage in West Point, New York, at more than $100 million. Total costs, $2.2 billion. Central, Gulf, South, and Southeast, June 2023. Severe storms produced over 1,000 reports of weather-related damage across Oklahoma, Texas, Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, Arkansas, and Ohio. Total costs, $3.8 billion. West Coast, late 2022 through early 2023. Numerous atmospheric rivers in continuous succession caused severe flooding, record snowfall, and copious rainfall across California between late December and March 2023. Total costs, $4.6 billion. Southeast, Hurricane Idalia, August 2023. Idalia was the strongest hurricane to hit Florida's Big Bend region in more than 125 years. Idalia produced 5 to 10 inches of rainfall across the Big Bend region of Florida and southeast portions of Georgia and the Carolinas. Total costs, $3.6 billion. The Atlantic hurricane season, June 1st through November 30th. Communications during the Atlantic hurricane season are crucial. Relaying weather information, damage reports, health and welfare messages, and contact with amateurs in the affected areas can go on for weeks, depending on the extent of damage. Even in this era of satellite phones, fiber optic high-speed internet, nearly total nationwide saturation of 4G, and the build-out of 5G wireless phone service, vulnerabilities in our nation's communications infrastructure exist. All communications depend on the availability of reliable electricity, and when severe or catastrophic storms hit any area, the first thing to go is often reliable electricity. Even when electricity remains stable, communications can break down. Cell towers, even if they are functioning, can be overwhelmed by users trying to call into or out from the affected areas. Backup power sources for cell towers, batteries or generator-fueled batteries, can be depleted over time. Generators can run out of fuel. Generators or battery management systems can break down from age when stressed, or if they have not been maintained properly, thus proving Murphy's Law extended. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong, and at the worst possible time. As this is written, there are no tropical storms in the Atlantic or Gulf region, and typically there won't be for the next few weeks. As we move into August, conditions change dramatically and the prospect for tropical storm formation ramps up quickly. This means that we have time to prepare, especially those of us living in the southeastern U.S. Field Day is a dress rehearsal. This month is also Field Day, which represents a great opportunity to fine-tune your emergency station. There are very few people who don't need an emergency operations plan. So what's yours? Participating in Field Day lets you practice for emergency operations with the luxury of knowing it's not really an emergency. Interestingly, there are 750,000 amateur licensees in the U.S., but it is estimated that only between 30 and 40,000 hams participate in Field Day. That indicates that more than 700,000 licensees may be as ill-prepared as most other storm victims in an emergency. Here are just a few things to think about. If your main HF antenna is down, can you put together a suitable replacement with what you have on hand? Even if you have only a technician license, you may want to put up a good outside medium-wave HF antenna to monitor the bands. Do you have an outside VHF antenna? Many NOAA weather radio stations are vulnerable to storm damage and power outages too. You may need to be able to hear stations outside of your immediate service area. A good VHF antenna will let you do that. If your power goes out for a significant amount of time, do you have a suitable backup power system that will at least allow you to operate on HF with low power? Don't worry about not being heard. Big gun operators outside of the affected area will hear you and can relay messages to any part of the U.S. you need. I'm speaking from experience here. Do you have access to reliable local news? Don't imagine that your local AM or FM radio station is any more prepared than the average ham or citizen. Many aren't. Awards are given later to the few that were. Do you have a way to charge phones, laptops, hotspots? Don't forget that your pricey, high-speed fiber optic internet service may also be disrupted. You may have to drive a ways for your hotspot to be able to connect to a working cell tower. Do you have adequate supplies of batteries for your scanner, AM/FM radio, or HTs? Remember, any supplies not snapped up before the emergency will disappear as soon as recovery begins. The aftermath of a hurricane often brings unbearable heat and humidity. You will not be able to buy ice at any price within an hour's drive of where you live. Do you have a way to store ice before a storm hits? How about in a big chest? You can transfer those ice bags to your refrigerator if your power goes out. It could help keep some items from spoiling quickly. Don't expect your local repeaters to be functioning. Many local clubs have repeaters in places that may be unreachable in a storm. They can suffer the same problems imposed by Mr. Murphy for individuals. I'm speaking from experience here. In the aftermath of a tropical storm years ago, the most used 2-meter repeater nearby was on life support and could only be used by trustees to stop anyone from using it, making it not much use to anyone. How are your local repeaters? It's much easier to do repairs or upgrades when you're not operating under emergency conditions. Even if you're not in an affected area, you can keep up with what's happening by monitoring HF frequencies observed by the NHC. But remember, if you're not in the affected area, don't get in the way. Listen, but don't join in. Let the net controllers do their jobs. The National Hurricane Center provides the following HF, VHF, and UHF frequencies on the WX4 NHC website, w4ehw.fiu.edu. Amateur radio HF frequencies, single sideband mode, 20 meters, 14.325 megahertz, hurricane watch net, main frequency during hurricanes, 40 meters, 7.268 megahertz, waterway net, secondary frequency, maritime mobiles net, 80 meters, 3.815 megahertz, Caribbean net, alternates, 3.95, North Florida, 3.94, South Florida, Amateur Radio EchoLink IRLP. EchoLink Conference, WX Talk, Node 7203. EchoLink Alternate Conference, VKEMCOMM. IRLP Node 9219. Alternate Node 9508 or 9123. Amateur Radio VHF UHF Frequencies, Miami, Florida. VHF 147.47 MHz Simplex. Coordination Frequency for NHC Ops. Official use only, please. VHF 147.0, 146.4 Repeater. 146.925 Backup Repeater. PL 94.8 Hz. UHF 444.6, 449.6 Repeater. PL 94.8 Hz. APRS Mode Frequencies. HF 30 meters, 10.151 MHz Lower Sideband. VHF 2 meters, 144.39 MHz Simplex. WX4NHC asks hams and shortwave listeners to QSL the station via Julio Ripoll, WD4R, on QRZ.com when it's not operating under emergency conditions. Like any other amateur station, reports help the station see how its signal is getting out. You would be hard-pressed to find a ham anywhere in the world with more first-hand experience in disaster communications than Julio, who was the co-founder and first coordinator for amateur radio at the National Hurricane Center, and has been a volunteer amateur operator at NHC since 1980. He has seen some of the worst that hurricanes have to offer in his time, including Hurricane Andrew in 1992, a Category 5 hurricane said to be the most destructive to ever hit Florida and the costliest, exceeded only by Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and Irma in 2017. Julio is also the founder and coordinator of the University of Miami Haiti HAMS HH2/WX4NHC, which became the longest sustained international deployment of amateur radio and Mars operators to provide emergency communications after the 7-magnitude earthquake that struck Port-au-Prince, Haiti, on January 12, 2010. You can read more about Julio and WX4NHC in the August 2012 issue of Monitoring Times at worldradiohistory.com. Hurricane Hunter Missions. NOAA's Aircraft Operations Center has two WP-3 Orion aircraft that fly out of Lakeland Regional Airport in Florida. These aircraft are used for both operational missions to collect in-storm data, including from the Tail Doppler Radar, TDR, and for research missions to gain a better scientific understanding of hurricanes and test new instruments. The Air Force Reserve has 10 WC-130J aircraft at the 53rd Weather Reconnaissance Squadron at Keesler Air Force Base in Biloxi, Mississippi, which fly directly into the core of the storm to gather critical data for forecasting a hurricane's intensity and landfall. Flying directly into the storm center, these planes drop probes called drop wind zones at strategic points that continuously transmit critical weather data back to the plane, including pressure, humidity, temperature, wind direction, and wind speed. These data give a detailed picture of the storm structure and intensity. The planes also collect wind data at flight level and have a special microwave radiometer that measures surface wind and the rate of rain. All these data are relayed from the plane to a satellite and then to NHC, where hurricane specialists use it together to assess the cyclone's location, strength, motion, and size. All of these data, including TDR data from NOAA aircraft, are fed into computer models to improve forecasts of hurricane track, intensity, and structure, and to help hurricane researchers achieve a better understanding of storm processes. It's not always a bumpy ride. NOAA also has a GIV jet that cruises 45,000 feet above and around a storm. It can cover thousands of square miles around a storm using drop wind zones and TDR to collect different types of data from the storm's core and surrounding environment. The data is sent to NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Prediction in College Park, Maryland, where it's used in computer models that have been able to improve hurricane track forecasts by about 20% in recent years. Text courtesy of National Hurricane Center. And now, Amateur Radio Insights by Kirk Kleinschmidt, NT0Z. NT0Z at stealthamateur.com. More mentoring, more success. When we last met, my home RF lab's GPS disciplined oscillator, GPS-DO, a handy device that uses the ubiquitous GPS system to provide a highly accurate 10 MHz RF signal and other time-based outputs if desired, that can be used as a precision reference for SDRs, frequency counters, spectrum analyzers, etc., which had been working fine for months, had suddenly lost its 10 MHz reference signal outputs. My mid-70s HP frequency counter, which had been reliably disciplined by the GPS-DO signal, was now forced to rely on its internal 10 MHz oscillator, which, although reasonably accurate, was known to be a few hertz off frequency at 10 MHz. Obviously, for most amateur work at HF and lower in frequency, this isn't the worst accuracy value in the world. But when you have easy and affordable access to a GPS-DO that can maintain the accuracy of a downstream device to a whole bunch of decimal places, you don't want to fall back to the bad old days. Online mentors, the way of the future, from several HP and GPS groups, had been helping me to troubleshoot the units, which still worked fine in every other way. Interestingly, even with their assistance, a poor assumption on my part initially sent me down the wrong rabbit hole. When I initially discovered that the external reference wasn't controlling the HP circuits, I checked in with Lady Heather, the software that monitors the function of the GPS-DO system, provides the signal strengths of every received satellite, tracks historical data related to the time-varying voltages required to correctly discipline the 10 MHz output signal, among many other functions, and she reported that everything was fine and that the system was locked. With such positive assurances, considering that the software looked and worked exactly as it had when the system was actually working, I assume that the 10 MHz reference signal input circuit in the counter had crapped out. After all, the counter was 50 years old, and many of its circuits are built with discrete logic chips and transistors that can suffer age-related failures. Plus, a small vendor actually sells a repair kit that addresses this counter issue by replacing the aging logic chips in the reference input circuit with a tiny SMD PCB that plugs into the socket of one of the failure-prone chips, a daughter board that uses one of the replaced chips as a hardware interface. Nifty. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.